Okay, and thank you for asking me to take an active role in my own recovery. You know, it's real easy to sit in the back of the meeting and not say anything. Let's see, I got sober January 25th, 1994. So tomorrow's my 29th year anniversary, if I make it to midnight. I'm pretty sure I'm going to make it there. I came from a single family home. And my mom, or single family, single parent home. And back in the 40s, that was a big thing, unusual. I'm not sure, maybe in high school there were some other kids like that, but not when I was growing up, grade school and all. I don't think that was so horrible. The little bit I knew of my father, I mean, he was okay, but I wasn't like real missing him or anything. I have ADHD, only when I was in grade school, they didn't even know what that was. So I was just a bad kid who wasn't paying attention. You're smart, but you're acting dumb because you're not paying attention. I remember that in first grade, I was in the Bluebirds. They broke the class into three groups. By the end of the week, I was in that was the top group. By the end of the week, I was in the bottom group. Because I kept looking out the window and I didn't know the words when it was my turn to read. School wasn't too horrible, except I hated it. I went through somewhere along the line in my teenage years in high school. I just like everything just imploded on me. Here comes Gary. Just imploded on me, and I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to have anything to do with anything else. So I quit going to school. The next thing you know, I'm going in there taking all these tests, and they had me set up for a counseling session, whatever, the county. And I got sexually assaulted by the therapist. Needless to say, I didn't go back. I went in the army. I don't know my first drink. We were always sneaking something wherever I could, but most of them were sips. It wasn't until like in high school where I got totally blitzed out of my mind. And I also had my first run-in with the cops. It wasn't nothing spectacular. I got drunk and I was tired and I couldn't go anymore. And I laid down on somebody's lawn. And next thing you know, the cops are there arresting me. Plus, I was underage for drinking, too, at the time. I went in the Army and it was funny. Up to that time, I wasn't crazy about beer, but I drank it. I mean, drank anything just about. Towards the end, I did drink just about everything and anything. But went over to Germany. We did quite a bit of drinking over there, and their beer is up to three times as strong as the American beer. So go get two bottles on an empty stomach before dinner. Nice buzz right through dinner. But when I got out of the Army, I was going to aircraft mechanic school during the day, and I was working a factory job at night. And I didn't have time to drink. I mean, I was sleeping in the, we had a carpool. I was sleeping in the car pull, trying, you know, to get enough sleep to last through the week. And I really didn't drink. And through most of my 20s, I mean, I got drunk once or twice. How many ever times it was, I don't keep track. But towards my late 20s, all of a sudden, well, there was a girl. The story starts off with there was a girl. And but there was also drugs, and I hadn't had any drugs up till that time. And the way I hear people describe their first drink, I didn't have that on my first drink, but I sure did on my first hit. Oh my goodness, I fell in love. And I really didn't drink much at that time. I was doing drugs. I didn't need anything more. And I got strung out on meth and amphetamines. I mean, this is 45 years ago or so. And I was dying. Literally, I was dying and I knew it. I did anything in any way, fashion. The only thing I didn't do was like smoking the meth and all, because nobody was doing that then. It was either snorting it or injecting it. That was it. And unfortunately, I got involved with the needles and ended up with hepatitis C and all the stuff that goes with it. I'm going to take a guess, 10 years this was going on. And I knew I had to stop the drugs. So I stopped the drugs. Slowly. I won't do this particular drug anymore, or I won't do this particular delivery method anymore, because it makes a big difference. And I never thought about alcohol. I didn't drink that much. I didn't have a problem with alcohol. My problem was drugs. So I never tried to give up alcohol. I just kept drinking. And I probably, deep down inside, knew I was drinking more and more and more. But that realization was delayed for quite a while. I got a couple memories I like to share, because I like to remember them. Woke up one Monday morning, football-sized black and blue on my back. Don't have any idea where that came from. A hellacious hangover. And I went and I followed my normal morning ritual. I mean, I drank the whole pot of Mr. Coffee. I didn't drink just the cups. And I remember thinking, well, you know, overdid it a little this weekend, because it was always just a little. And I went to work. I was the foreman at the time, so I gave the guys their jobs. And figured I'd close the office door and suffer through it. But about 10 o'clock in the morning, I started feeling really bad. I called the front office and, you know, told them I was going home sick. It took about till 1 o'clock that afternoon to realize I was running a fever. I had the flu. And I didn't know the difference between having the flu and just another Monday morning. I don't ever want to forget that, because I can get a cold now and I'm like a big sissy where, oh man, I think I'm dying. And when I think about the way I used to walk around, it's amazing. I amaze myself with that. The other is I was in this motorcycle club and wasn't the gang, wasn't, you know, all Harleys. It was 50-50, but it was a real fancy club. They had their own land, their own building, this, that, the other, and more jobs and titles you can shake a stick at. And I ended up where I wanted to be, Bob the bartender. I figured the closer I was to the bottles, the better off I was. Plus, during the business meeting, you couldn't serve alcohol. If you had it, you could drink it. So I'm at the bar. I keep pouring shots underneath for myself. Make a long story short, I got on the motorcycle and was going home. And it was a 15, 20-mile ride. And I got off the interstate and came over the overpass, and there was a DUI checkpoint. And they were checking every vehicle. And I'm going, oh, shit. No use trying to turn around. They always have a trailer car on behind you. And it must have taken 15, 20 minutes to get up to the cop himself coming down the hill. And I have no idea what was going through that guy's mind. But if he had just asked me my name, he would have known I was drunk. I was that slurry, you know, slurring my words type of drunk at that point. He just looked up and waved me through. And as I gave the throttle, I said, I'm going to ride the motorcycle every time I drink. And not only did I say that to myself, I did it for months. It was months before I actually got in a car and drove to the meeting. I was a slow starter in a lot of things. Like I said, I was almost 30 by the time I really got into addictive behavior. I didn't get married until I was 40. I remember the night we went on a blind date. She got in the car. She took the joint right out of my hand, took this great big hit off of it. We went to a club. We danced and drank all night. Probably did a couple more bones. I have no idea. Went home with her, and I was in love. It was the real thing this time. Ended up marrying her. And, you know, marrying your drinking partner usually ends up, it was not a happy home. Let me put it that way. We're both very destructive. I punched more damn holes in the walls, kicked doors off the hinges. You're not locking me out of a room in my house, you know, that kind of stuff. But I figured that was okay because I was a carpenter. I knew how to fix all this stuff. So I just, you know, patched the holes in the walls, fixed the door, and what have you. And it was chaotic. So I go out to New Mexico. That's where my first wife was from. And go fishing with her brother. And I just had a bad feeling before we went. And we took a case of beer to the lake with us, and we finished the beer, and then we went to a bar and blah, blah, blah. And about 11:30, 11:45 on July 3rd, 1991, I think. I was going eastbound in the westbound lane on the interstate and ran into a car. They all couldn't avoid me. And I ended up in jail that night again. I think that was the last time I was in jail, as a matter of fact. but I bailed myself out. I had a pocket full of traveler's checks. Still had to go through a bail bondsman, but, you know, I got myself bailed out. Paid the fine. Spent the rest of the vacation fixing the car so I could drive it home. It still needed a lot of work when I got it home, but I had to have headlights and, you know, all the necessary things. And I went through a crazy story. I'm not going to tell it because it's going to take too long. But with my license, New Jersey, New Mexico, and the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. And I wasn't a happy camper. But it all worked out in the long run. And I swore I was going to stop drinking. You know, when I got back from New Mexico. Oh, my ex decided not to come back from New Mexico with me. And I guess she called work and extended her vacation. I don't know what exactly she did, but she was out there. She stayed out there for a while. And one morning the phone rang. Saturday morning, and it's my ex, and she says, "Do you remember last night?" I hated those words. Now, she's in New Mexico. I'm in New Jersey. "No, do you remember last night?" "No, I don't remember last night." Well, long story short, you admitted you were an alcoholic. You said you're going for help. I'm like, holy shit. Did I really say that? Then she says, "I gave you the flight number and everything." And I was sleeping on the sofa, and on the coffee table is a piece of paper. And the best I can say is you gave a two-year-old a pen or a pencil, because that's there. Just all these scribbles. I couldn't get one number. Airline, I couldn't get anything out of what I'd scribbled on the paper. I went upstairs and I said, "Well, I told her I'm going to get help." So I took the phone book out, opened it to Alcoholics Anonymous. And well, I'll call this afternoon. I don't want to call in the morning. Anyway, I'm still hungover. 3 days later, I put the phone book back where we normally kept it and hadn't called. But decided I was going to quit on my own. I made 28 days. 28 miserable friggin' days, and I thought I was going crazy, Jordan. Oh, my God. Whew. Yeah, secular meeting. Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm not going to worry about my language that way or not. Things I've been saying for all these years, I'm going to probably keep saying. I made those 28 days and came home and blamed it on my ex because she'd come home drunk and had a hot dog on the stove. I was at school and the whole house, I couldn't even go in the house. I mean, there was so much smoke in the house. Luckily, it was just the hot dog in the pan that burned, you know, not the whole kitchen. But I use that as my excuse to quick go to the liquor store, get a bottle. And I drank. And I kept drinking for a couple more years. I knew I was in trouble. But even though, I mean, I knew about AA and stuff, I knew it was there. I didn't know a lot about it. I'd been to a few meetings, but I didn't pick anything up because I was trying to pick something up at the meeting, and which was a young lady, of course. And I didn't remember hardly anything about it, except that I got a kick out of some of the people's stories. Around New Jersey, New York City area, there's a ton of speaker meetings. They used to say, if you don't speak at least once a month, you're not doing it right. Moved down to Florida. We have very few. I speak a couple times a year. That's it. That's enough. And I remember one time, And it was so funny to look, think about now, but it's an example of my thinking at the time. I remember I had a speaking commitment in Fords, New Jersey. And it was a big building. There had to be 100 people there or more. That didn't bother me because I was used to speaking by that time. I had a couple of years, maybe. And here, my ex and all her girlfriends walk in, and I'm just there going, oh, shit. But really, when I think about it, I'm going to hide what I did from the person who's supposed to be the closest in my life. Well, that's what I did. I hid things back then a lot. I hated school when I was in high school. I mean, it was a chore. As an adult, I started enjoying going to school. Of course, I was taking the courses I wanted to take for my benefit. I didn't have, you know, prescribed ones and all. And so I was taking these courses, and drinking in the courses were kind of in conflict with each other. Because most of the classes didn't start till 7:38 at night. And I got to drink through this. Or I can't drink through it. So I took my normal route out of that situation. I took easier classes. The last year, while I was actively drinking, that I went to school, I had two classes. They were the easiest classes you could think of. It just had to show up. And if you showed up 7 out of 10 nights, you got a certificate. I flunked them both. I already had a DUI by that time and stuff. And it was quite a ride to this school. So if I started drinking before I went to the school, I didn't go. So I flunked the courses. Now, I'm not going to fit this in nice, because Bob's mind doesn't work nice and smooth. It's like a pinball machine. It goes all over. I'd gotten sober, and I'll come back to that. But first year, I took fairly easy courses. When the ADA first got passed. And it was, again, show up and you get a certificate. Well, it was directly related to the job I had, so that was good. But it was an easy course. And then the next semester, I started taking the regular courses that you actually had to study for and stuff. Be perfectly honest, part of my studying was I didn't have to talk to the ex when I was doing that. When I had my nose in a book, I didn't have to deal with her too much. But I finally decided, well, hell, I could teach some of this. I was a building inspector at the time. I'd started off as a carpenter, ended up doing building inspection. I said, hell, I could teach this stuff. So I went and got myself certified to teach it. Now, I sent out resumes to all the community colleges close by because it's a required course if you're going to get a building inspector's license in New Jersey. And I finally got a call. And I go there, you know. Show up, go to the night school office at whatever building it was in. And I went, and the lady was really nice, welcomed me on board and all this stuff. And took me, she says, I'll show you your classroom. I didn't bother saying I'd been taking courses there for years. I knew where most of the rooms were, or I could find them anyway. Took me to the classroom of one of those classes that I flunked out. And now with 3 or 4 years sobriety, I don't remember exactly how much, I was going to be a teacher in that room. I get a little emotional on that particular thing because it was such a shock. Just that it was the room, you know, the same room. But let's go back to the drinking, Bob. I kept drinking. The house was, like I said earlier, it was a battle zone. And I won't go into too much detail on that part of it, but it was not pretty. So about, one night, the ex comes home. She puts her hands on her hips, and very defiant look, and looks at me and says, "I'm going to Al-Anon." And I'm like, "You traitor." But the funny thing is, about a week or two later, she came in, walked up, because I live pretty much on the bottom floor of the house in the rec room there, and came through out of the garage. And she went upstairs and didn't say anything. And she says, "You know, this Al-Anon stuff isn't so bad. I'm not hearing her bitching and moaning and, you know, how much you've been drinking or something." And I always come back when I had a couple, and then she'd say, "Why are you slurring your words?" The normal stuff. I'm not sure. A couple months later, she comes in and makes another announcement. She decided she's an alcoholic, and she started going to meetings. And so every night she was going out to a meeting. "I'm going to a meeting. I'm going to a meeting." And I wasn't saying nothing, because I know that's how they get you. So I didn't ask what kind of meeting or anything. Just have a good time. I'll see you. And finally, I remember one Saturday morning. It was probably the end of November. She said, "You go or want to go to a meeting with me?" And I, "Yeah, okay, I'll go." It was a big book meeting. But at the beginning, they asked for newcomers, and there was three of us in the back row, of course. Put our hands up, and Joe on whatever, all this stuff. And Bob Alcoholic just rolled out of my tongue, off my tongue. It wasn't traumatic. I'd known I was an alcoholic for years. I waited a week or so and decided, well, I'll try another meeting. So I walked into the worst meeting I've ever been in 29 years of sobriety. That was my meeting number two. I'm there shaking and detoxing and what have you. And it was a bunch of teenagers. And the one guy, you know, he'd been clean for 2 weeks, and his father still won't trust him and let him go to the concert. And then it was a teenage young lady that, I forget, somebody called her something in school and her life was over. I don't remember all the details of that, but I remember going back home and thinking, man, this a bunch of shit. And the next night I just, you know, I told my ex, I said, I'm not going to that crap. And so Wednesday night I sat home. And Thursday, she was going out the door. Her sponsor had come to pick her up. And after about 5 minutes, she came back in the house. And she says, there's no room for you, but you want to come with us to the meeting. Her sponsor, they were speaking at a local meeting there. And that was okay, because I heard people's stories and it sounded real. It wasn't this nonsense. And after that, she told me, try this meeting, this meeting, this meeting. And I got going in it. But I wasn't going very far. You see, I didn't have anybody's phone number. I didn't call anybody. I didn't go every day. I had already read the big book because I woke up with it on the pillow beside my head one Sunday morning. And I read the first 164 pages because every time I sat up, my head throbbed too bad. So I'd lay back down and start reading it again. However, on a Sunday in New Jersey, the liquor store was closed at 6, and I made sure I was to the liquor store before 6. Even though I said it made sense at all, I wasn't ready to go put myself into this. So went on for anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. I was going to meetings and I was continually drinking. I remember I only went there a couple times. It was a 9 o'clock speaker meeting on a Monday night. And there was no way I could wait till after the 10 o'clock at night and not have any alcohol in me. Nah. So when I woke up one morning and I felt worse than I ever felt in my life, all up here. You know, I drank the night before. I didn't hardly have a hangover. It was just maybe I drank a pint. Who knows what it was, but it wasn't that much. But I felt lost. Lost is probably the best word for it. And so I went to the meeting that night. I got a sponsor. I joined the home group. And that was the last day. That would have been tonight, 29 years ago. And I got involved. I've always been involved in service work. Most of it at the very beginning was picking up chairs and folding tables and, you know, getting the meeting room clean again and things of that type, or going there early and setting up. But I also took all the group jobs, and they talked me into intergroup rep. I didn't have 2 years yet, but they wanted me to do it anyway. And I found out why they wanted you to have at least 2 years. I was ready to pick a chair up and wrap it around this guy's head. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. 200 ego-driven alcoholics, not just alcoholics, the more ones with the bigger egos in the same room. And I had my big ego there too. I'm not going to pretend I didn't. But I've always had a job. So myself and my first wife divorced. And I met another lady, and it was quite kind of a quick courtship thing. And next thing you know, we're married. Only this one, when I say didn't drink, she didn't drink what I call drinking. I remember we went down to Aruba one time, and she bought a bottle of vodka in Puerto Rico duty-free shop, and we took it to Aruba, and she 17 days later, there's still this much booze in the bottom of the bottle. I found bottles after I stopped drinking, but none of them were full. I just found empties. So anyway, I got married the second time. The best part of that is I ended up ending after I had slow that one down a little. The tongue got faster than my head. Or my head got faster than my tongue. So we end up coming down, both retiring. We're both a little young for retirement. But 9/11 happened and my job was gone. I left myself exposed because I was making more money that way. So I worked part-time for the next year doing building inspection. And then we moved to Florida. That I've got to thank her for. She died last spring sometime. But I have to thank her for that because she had a place down here already. And we came here on the honeymoon and I loved it. And a couple of years later, we moved down here. And draw the comparison. I liked some of the things of AA in Florida. They didn't have quite as many grumpy old men who'd interrupt you in the middle and blah, 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 blah. There's some, but not very many. But oh my gosh, I'm in the middle of the Bible Belt. Every meeting down here, you know, Serenity Prayer at the beginning. At the end, I got the Lord's Prayer. And praise God. I don't know how many, I called them revival meetings I went to over the years down here. And there's no kind of country thing. So it's like maybe 70, 80 miles trying to get a secular in-person meeting. I didn't bother. But then COVID came along. Ooh, I missed a big part of it. I can do that one quick. Then COVID came along and I found secular AA. And I am in love with secular AA. I don't have to grind my teeth in meetings. Oh, when I came out of the closet. When I, in a meeting, said, I don't believe in God. I got some, put it this way, not very Christian treatment towards me. I remember the one, just because it was so funny, I shocked the shit out of him. Right when I announced I was didn't believe in God, he comes up after that meeting. He says, Bob, you know, you're living in the Bible Belt. So I go to meetings every day. I go to a ton of meetings. Probably have more meetings than I have days. So the next meeting, he says the same thing. The third meeting, he says the same thing. And I'm thinking, I've had enough of this. You know, I turned on him in a real nasty tone of voice and all. What the fuck's that supposed to mean? And, you know, he almost shit his pants. He backed up so fast, it was ridiculous. But not all of them backed up. I've had some not so wonderful experiences in traditional AA because if this is my belief, I'm going to say it. And I'm not going to, let's not talk about that. I suffered in AA for years, almost 18 years before I came out of the closet. And, there's got to be other, I figured there's got to be other people like me out there. But if they don't hear somebody say it, they're not going to know that it is. At least, you know, I've been approached by several people. I don't know if they, what they're doing today as far as their meetings, don't care. I just guided them. Here's a website. You can go to this website and you're free. Probably the proudest thing and accomplishment in my life happened in 2006 in November. I flew down flew up to New Jersey and picked my mother up. She was 99 years old, and flew her back down to Florida, and she lived with me. She died at 102. And it wasn't easy. It was not easy. The women in Yale probably not like it, but you don't know how many times I said, I wish I had a sister. I didn't. I had a brother. He was going to put her in a nursing home in New Jersey, so I went up and got her. It's funny, growing up, he did everything right. I did everything wrong, you know. At the end, he don't want any part of her. He don't want, you know. Anyway, my mouth's getting dry. I think I should shut up.